Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 30 million workers are currently collecting unemployment benefits, but without the $600 weekly addition from the federal government, making ends meet is incredibly difficult, especially in states with low benefits. Over 2 months ago, House Democrats passed a bill to extend the $600, but Republicans refused to act before they went on recess. Yesterday, the Trump administration said they support an additional $300 in weekly benefits, but that money would come from a federal disaster relief fund managed by FEMA. The Washington Post reports that many states are warning of immense delays as they race to upgrade their outdated computer systems. Others say the program is so confusing it may prevent them from sending any new aid at all. And this leaves millions of people struggling to pay for the basics. According to updated data from the U.S. Census, 29 million adults say their household did not have enough to eat in the last week. One in five renters are now behind on their rent, and 28 million people face eviction. Joining us now to give us an update on her situation is Sheila Ritter, a former security guard and mom living in Denver, Colorado, who lost her job because of COVID and had to move into an RV because she could not make her rent. And Sheila struggles to make ends meet. We had Sheila on a couple of weeks ago, and we wanted to bring her back to get an update. Hi, Sheila. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Not a problem. How you doing today?
Oh, hanging in there. How are you doing? I understand that you had to actually leave Colorado because of the fires?
Yeah, it got to where I was having too many asthma attacks, and it just if I can't breathe, I can't survive. So it was kind of like it's either stay here and try to find work or go someplace where I could actually breathe and try to find some work.
Wow. And I have to say, there's so much going on right now. We had freak weather in California, and we've got so many fires happening in our state. I haven't even been keeping up with what's going on in Colorado, but I just did a search, and it looks like fires are burning across the state.
Oh, yeah. It's got three of them, three major ones, pretty close to Denver right now, wow. All up in the mountains, just burning up all the beautiful scenery that we have.
Sad. So you had to leave the state because, gosh, the air quality is just so bad. How are you doing otherwise, Sheila? I mean, the last time we had you on, you talked about how you had no choice but to move out of your apartment, and you and your son moved into an RV because you just can't make ends meet.
Yeah, it's gotten worse as far as not being able to afford things because of the $600 addition that we don't have now, and it's really making it hard to be able to afford to feed a growing child. You know, I'm down to eating once a day, making sure that he eats as much as he needs. But you know, it's hard.
Are you connected? I understand that you volunteered for your local food bank a while back, but because of COVID, that made it tough. Are you connected still to the food bank? Are you getting any help from them?
Well, no, we're in Wyoming. We're not getting any help from them, but right before we left, I did go and pick up some food from them, so we did get a little bit of help from them. The lady that runs the place, Linda, she said that they're having trouble finding enough food to stock the food bank with because nobody's donating anything to the food bank.
So you're trying to get food from the food bank, but it's not enough to make up for what you can't buy because the food banks are now even suffering.
Right, yeah. They're not giving out as much as they had been because they're having to stretch it, and they're trying to help twice as many people, sometimes three times as many people as they were before on less donations. And it's hard, and it's only going to get worse.
Right. You know, Sheila, we've done a lot of shows about poverty over the years, and people always say that once you move into an RV, for example, and you have a tough time making ends meet and you don't have a regular paycheck, you just get the hole gets bigger. And I understand that actually happened to you because you had tire issues and then you had roof issues.
Yeah. Right? And I still haven't gotten the roof done.
Which costs a lot of money.
Yeah, $7,700. It's ridiculous.
Wow. Well, you know, a couple of people, actually a number of people emailed us after you were on last time asking how to help. And Sheila does have a GoFundMe campaign. I mean, that's what people have to resort to. And we did link to that on our website at yourcallradio.org. How is your health, Sheila? You've got asthma. Your son is also dealing with health issues. And as you said, you know, an RV, it's very crammed. It's hard to take a shower on a regular basis. It's hard to even cook fresh food. How is your health doing? How's your son's health?
Well, his health, that's part of the reason why I make sure that he gets something to eat every day is because he's type 1 diabetic. And between the not getting enough food for him of the proper type and the fact that we have very small refrigerator to keep his insulin in, and you know, if that thing goes out, he's not going to have any insulin, and then, you know, there's going to be some massive problems. Myself, I've got a myriad of different medical issues, fibromyalgia, high blood pressure, diabetes myself. And so, you know, trying to balance the food situation, medication, and getting to doctor's appointments, I mean, the hole is getting bigger, and you know, I don't know what to do about it.
How do you get your meds? Are any of your medications sent through the mail?
No. Okay. All my medications, I get them through Walgreens, and my brother goes and picks them up for me. And whenever I'm able to go and pick them up from him, or if he can bring them to me, then he does. Mm.
I just asked because of the issues that we're having with mail right now, but I'm glad that you're not getting your meds through mail.
Well, my son, he gets his Omnipod, his insulin pump, and his CGMs through the mail.
Oh.
And yeah, they're, I don't know. I'm probably going to have to go down to Byers to pick up his pods because, you know, they're so inconsistent with the mail right now that I don't know. These things are necessary. I mean, my son could die without his insulin. If he doesn't get his pump items, then he can't get his insulin. Mm. So, you know, they really need to start thinking. The government needs to start thinking about the people instead of about whatever they're thinking about.
Right.
You know, they're messing us over, and some of us are going to die because of it.
Mm. Well, right. And as I mentioned, Sheila, you know, the House Democrats passed a bill over two months ago now to extend that $600 a week in benefits.
Yeah.
If that did kick in tomorrow, Sheila, how would that change your life right now?
Well, I'd be able to afford my son's medication.
Yeah.
I mean, the insulin itself is like $600 a month. And, you know, that's what the extra money would be. That would be freaking awesome. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to scrape, borrow, and swipe things from my mother in order to afford these things, you know? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Our government really needs to start focusing more on the people here instead of whatever venues that they have going on in their heads that they can't figure out, you know, who's running the show.
The Washington Post reports that in recent days, states including Colorado, where you're from, where your RV, where you usually live, but because of the fires you left, Florida, North Carolina, and West Virginia say that they're going to try to get some kind of additional unemployment payments to out-of-work residents. What are you hearing from Colorado politicians? Is there any idea when this could happen?
No, Governor Polis, he's doing the best he can, I think, but it's so up in the air right now with all this COVID virus and the unemployment. And, I mean, even my mother, who works for unemployment, doesn't know what's going on. She's like, I don't know when they're going to do this or if they're going to do this. Hmm. They haven't told us anything. And they're running still a month behind getting the unemployment payments out, the initial payments out, because they are so underfunded and so understaffed that they're doing the best they can. Mm.
And Sheila, just to remind listeners, we had Sheila on a couple weeks ago, and she told us her story about sadly losing her husband 2.5 years ago, and trying to raise, you know, children on Social Security doesn't cut it. So she did get a job. She worked security at the Pepsi Center in Denver. She was making $11.75 an hour, and she got laid off. The security company gave workers a $100. And since then, she's been on unemployment but hasn't been able to find another job, and she's got health issues. And Sheila, so many people have similar stories.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I know a lot of people that are in the same boat as I am. I've got a family member who's been homeless for 6 years, and this has only made it worse. My two older children, they just got apartments like right before COVID hit, thank God, because they would still be out on the street. And even my middle son said the other day, he says, I can't figure out how to find a job when I have no freaking skills. I'm only 18. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. And I'm like, do the best you can, maybe. Just go down to job services. And he's like, job services isn't open, Mom. How can I find a job if I can't even go in and put an application in because I don't have a computer? I don't have the means that they want now for me to go find a freaking job. I say, how do I do that? I'm like, don't know. I wish I could help you. I don't know.
How is your son doing?
He's okay. He struggles, but, you know, he's got emotional issues. He suffers from depression and bipolar and all that other kind of really gnarly stuff. Mm. But he's trying to find a job, and he's trying to be productive. And, you know, with all this COVID and stuff going on, it's hard for young people, I guess, are having a lot of trouble finding jobs that they can support themselves on. Even before COVID was going on, they were having trouble finding a job to support themselves.
Sheila, I wonder, given the struggles that you're facing right now, you know, the Democratic convention kicked off last night. Did you watch any of it?
I don't have a television.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a television, and I don't have the wherewithal to watch anything like that.
I just wonder, what do you want to hear from politicians right now?
What I don't want to hear is any more lies.
Yeah.
I am tired of hearing the lies. I'm tired of hearing about how good we have it right now and how the COVID virus isn't that bad. Now it's just the flu and blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't want to hear that crap. I want to hear things like, yeah, we're going to help you get out of this situation. Yeah, we're going to help you afford, you know, a place to live. I want to hear them say, you know, I know times are tough right now. I know we have all these people who can't pay their rent, but we can't evict them. We can't just throw people out on the street. I mean, there's millions of people who are on the roster for the next time that the eviction court's open. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is going to cause a massive problem, and they need to start figuring out that the little people, us 28 million people that are about to be homeless, are the ones that pay their bills. We're the ones that put them into office. They need to remember that.
Yeah. You know, before we let you go, Sheila, I understand that one of the jobs you're looking for, and you wanted to give a shout out in case a listener might have a connection, but you're hoping to get a job managing an RV park?
Yeah, that way I could actually have a place to put my RV without having to worry about where am I going to be ending up next week or next month, or, you know, what is going to happen in the next few days. I want to be able to have a stable place to have an address so I can, my son can get a job, and so I can have a job that I can work and, you know, be there to help people that are basically in the same situation I'm in.
Right. And you're willing to go anywhere in the country?
Yeah, right now, I don't care. I am desperate. I need some place to call home.
Well, if anyone has any recommendations for Sheila, I'm in regular touch with her, so you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. Sheila is hoping to get a job managing an RV park, so if you have any tips for her, they would be greatly appreciated. Sheila also has a GoFundMe page, which you can find on our website, yourcallradio.org. Sheila, we're thinking about you, and thank you for joining us again. And, you know, we'd love to just check in with you every couple weeks just to find out how you're going, how you're doing, because I think it's so important to elevate voices like yours.
Well, I would really appreciate that, Rose, and I really like being able to have some place that actually listens to what people like me have to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We're thinking of you and your son. And we'll, and I'll be in touch, Sheila. Hopefully we'll get some tips, and I'll be in touch.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. That is Sheila Ritter, a former security guard and mom living in Denver, Colorado, who lost her job. She then couldn't pay rent in her apartment, so she had to move into an RV with her son. And as you just heard, she struggles to make ends meet. She had to deal with tire issues, roof issues, and then she left Denver because of all of the fires. Again, if you have any tips for Sheila, any connections at RV parks, please email us yourcall@kalw.org. Now we are going to check in and find out what's going on in New Jersey. We're joined by Matt Shapiro. Matt is president of the New Jersey Tenants Organization. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Well, Matt, what, any thoughts on Sheila's story? I'm sure you're hearing similar stories in New Jersey.
That was so heartrending.
Yeah.
Such a, you know, clearly intelligent person who could easily be gainfully employed, who is just being beaten down by the system. That's horrible. Yeah, there are lots of stories like that all over the country. New Jersey is no exception. In New Jersey, we're a little bit better off than other places because we have a lockout moratorium. That is not an eviction ban. It is just a ban on actually putting people out. Cases can be brought at any time, and eviction judgments can be granted. Courts aren't doing the judgments quite yet because they're not holding trials, but cases are being brought, and they're starting to pile up. We had a study done, and the prediction is that this month probably 450,000 tenants won't be able to pay the rent for August. And unless things change over the next 4 months, 300,000 of those families will very likely get evicted. Mm. Because, you know, the moratorium is going to expire, and then the backlog of cases, just as Sheila actually mentioned when you spoke to her, that backlog is gonna rush forth and produce loads of judgments, and those people are just gonna either be on the street, or in cars, or in shelters, or in motels, or if they have family, they'll be doubling and tripling up, all of which will lead to a tremendous resurgence of the pandemic. If legislators aren't interested in the human beings that are suffering, they ought to be interested in the rest of the country, the rest of in this case the state, and themselves, because the virus is coming back. If you put 300,000 families out, that is going to completely undo all of the efforts at containing the virus, and I don't think they're seeing that. we got legislation in the hopper and actually passed one house that would help a little bit, but only a little bit. Would help people by giving a repayment program. Once the moratorium is over, and these eviction judgments start to occur, this new piece of legislation would allow tenants to repay their unpaid rent over a period of up to 30 months. What that comes down to is they're going to have to pay the current rent plus around 16% or more, depending on how many months are owed, in addition to that, plus having to pay back the security deposit if they've used it. There was also an executive order saying that security deposits could be used to pay rent. So they're going to have to do all of that at the same time. And I guess the presumption is all of these people suddenly, because the moratorium is over, all of these people are suddenly going to have great jobs back. They're going to be totally reintegrated into the economy so they can pay, you know, maybe 20% or 25% if they have the security deposit added on, more than their current rent. It's a fiction.
Wow.
You know, some people, maybe a few thousand, I would say at most, would be able to be in that circumstance. But we're still going to have 300,000 evictions in New Jersey.
300,000 just in New Jersey.
Just in New Jersey. Yeah, it's simply going to happen. The only solution for a state, not the federal government. Federal government can do a whole lot because they've got the money. But for a state that's strapped for money, what they have to do if they want to deal with this in any effective way is to simply ban evictions, and not just the lockouts, but the trials, all of it. Ban eviction cases for a significant period of time. Anything starting back in from when the moratorium started, which was back at March 9th, I think it was. From then to, I would say, at least 6 months after, if not more, if not a year after this moratorium ends, to give people a chance to get back into the economy. That states have the power to do. That they can do that constitutionally, in my opinion. I'm not a lawyer, but I've dealt with this for a very long time.
Can you talk more about what you would like to see at this point, Matt? I mean, how would this play out? Because you've got people who are struggling to make their rent, and then you have apartment owners and homeowners, especially the mom and pops who are struggling to make their mortgages.
Uh-huh. Well, the first thing I'd like to see is a ban on evictions, just what I was saying. You have to stop it where you can, and that's what a state can do. The most vulnerable people are the tenants. They're not the landlords. Even the mom and pops have more ability to withstand the economic situation than the renters that they're renting to. But I do think that if it's possible, we ought to help the mom and the small landlords. I really like to call them mom and pops. They're landlords of small units, 2, 3, 4, 5 units. As that number goes up, they're not so small anymore. If you own 10 apartments, you're in a real business. If you have one tenant, then I'm willing to call you a mom and pop, whether or not you have children. We ought to try to get them some money to shore up their situation and to make sure that they can get if they have a mortgage, to have that held off, to give them forbearance and make sure they don't have to pay it back until the end of the mortgage, and to a degree get them some assistance. But that, you know, if we don't have a ban on evictions, the quid pro quo for that assistance is that those tenants don't get evicted, period. They have to stay in those homes. That's not the way a lot of landlords are looking at this. There are some landlords who will try to keep their tenants, but a lot of landlords, they're not getting the rent. They just want to evict. They just don't see the reason to keep someone on their property if they're not paying rent, and they don't consider them human beings, unfortunately. Some of those landlords think that they can get other tenants to come in, and probably they can. We're right near New York City, and a lot of tenants are fleeing the city because of the extreme high rents. So they might be able to get some tenants that way, some new tenants. But, you know, the result for the entire area is that we're forcing all of these people out. What do we want to see? We want a complete eviction ban, that goes well past the end of this moratorium. That's the main thing that we would want to see, and then we would want to try to help the small landlords as long as they completely commit to not evicting tenants.
Matt, before we let you go, we have a question from Keith. He writes, how will those who are evicted vote?
There are lots of issues. That is certainly one of the issues.
Right.
They're not going to vote. It's not that it's impossible, but it's almost impossible because they don't have an address. Oh. New Jersey is going to be all mail-in ballots. How are they going to get the ballot mailed to them if they're out on the street?
Wow.
It's not going to happen.
I mean, this is 300,000 potential evictions just in New Jersey.
Yeah, just for small state of New Jersey, 300,000. And our numbers are lower than the rest of the country.
Right.
talking 28, 30 million evictions in the country, that's horrendous. The federal government can actually do something about this if they want to. They can cancel the rent altogether and pay it for landlords who commit to giving tenants some, you know, reasonable rights. That's the bill that Ilhan Omar introduced. It's not going anywhere because, you know, tenants aren't human beings. They're not considered human beings, not only by the landlords, but by most of the politicians, unfortunately.
Matt, how long have you been doing this work?
I've been doing this for 48 years.
48 years, and
yeah.
I'm guessing you've never seen anything like this.
This is the worst crisis that I have ever seen. 300,000 families? This is incredible. I've been involved in all sorts of battles, largely rent control battles, we always have eviction problems, but nothing like this level. This is incredible. There's always a level of evictions because people who don't have a lot of money, and that, you know, most tenants don't have a lot of money. They live paycheck to paycheck. And when one of those paychecks stops, they can't pay the rent. And even with a just cause eviction law like we have in New Jersey, if you don't pay the rent, you're out. I mean, it'll take a few weeks, but you're going to be evicted. And so we always have some base amount of evictions. And the people who are in trouble, they need to be kept in in their homes. Even the ones who would have been evicted otherwise, they need to be kept in their homes because we need to do. I mean, why did we have the moratorium on evictions? It wasn't for the people. It was to stop them from going out and infecting other people in the pandemic. That was the real reason. It was, stay at home, and we don't want you to be evicted. Well, that should be a continuing issue. It shouldn't just stop because you think the health emergency is over, because you're going to bring that emergency right back.
Matt, I'm thinking about the Democratic Convention. It's lasting for 4 nights. It seems like this topic needs to be part of every single speech.
It certainly ought to be.
And yet, I haven't heard anything. I mean, Bernie brought it up last night, but that was about it.
Just Bernie. That's it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the truth. I didn't really listen to most of it. I listened to Bernie because I knew he would be uplifting, because I need something to be uplifting. And a little bit of Michelle Obama, but I really didn't listen to the rest. Bernie's message is the message, and it's not being focused on by the rest of the party, unfortunately.
Well, Matt, what can I say? Thank you for your work. Thank you for joining us, and we'd love to check in with you in a couple weeks to find out
how
things are going.
Great. And right. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Matt Shapiro is president of the New Jersey Tenants Organization. As you heard, he's been doing this work for 48 years. He's never seen anything like this. He expects 300,000 people will be evicted in New Jersey. And coming up after a break, we'll get an update on what's happening in California. According to the Aspen Institute, between 4 and 5.5 million renters could face eviction. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Well, you heard Matt Shapiro mention the COVID crisis, and that's what we're going to discuss tomorrow. Sadly, the U.S. death toll passed 170,000 this week. 6 months in, we do not have a national plan. Experts say there is no end in sight. So we'll talk about where that leaves us. We'll get the latest on the death toll, what we know about the struggle to recover, positive cases among young people, and so much more. If you have any questions about COVID, I hope you can join us tomorrow, or you can email them, yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to join today's conversation, we're just talking about the ongoing economic crisis. 29 million people do not have enough to eat. 28 million people face eviction. Although that number, depending on what study you look at, the numbers definitely vary. According to the Aspen Institute, as many as 40 million people in the U.S. risk eviction. Between 4 and 5.5 million renters here in California face eviction. And joining us to talk about that now is Shanti Singh, communications coordinator with Tenants Together. This is a renters' rights group in California. Hi, Shanti. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, Shanti, we just heard from Matt Shapiro in New Jersey. 300,000 people there, he thinks, are definitely going to be evicted. What are your thoughts about what will happen in California?
Quite possibly the same thing. I recognize Matt's frustration and alarm because I share that, and I think all of my colleagues do, and everyone who's working on the ground does. We are alarmed. We are frightened that, the legislature, the executive, the judiciary will fail to act in time, because we are facing basically an eviction cliff date of September 1st right now. So effectively, if the legislature does not pass a bill with a two-thirds supermajority, basically, to take effect before then, the courts will resume eviction processes, including for inability to pay rent. And that, you've already cited the Aspen Institute statistics. I believe for California, that ends up being something on the order of 4.1 to 5.4 million folks in California being evicted. So, it's quite dire, and we're staring down the barrel of this.
Well, Shanti, here in California, the Democrats have a supermajority. So what are you hearing from them?
There's still, right as we speak, Assembly Bill 1436, which is from Assemblymember David Chu, he's my assembly member here in San Francisco, That is being heard in the state Senate Judiciary Committee. It must now make it to the Senate floor. If it passes Judiciary today, then it'll have to go back to the Assembly through the Assembly committees on the floor, and then the governor will have to sign it. We do have a Democratic supermajority, but we do not have advanced statewide renter protections, with one exception that passed last year, AB 1482, which we support. But you know, aside from that, it's not the words "Democratic supermajority" do not guarantee like tenants' rights and tenants' laws because of the grip that real estate has on Sacramento, including on Democrats.
Mm. So tell us what you're hearing from people out there. I mean, we know that so many people are struggling to make ends meet. The $600 is not going to kick in anytime soon. So just give us a couple of examples of what you're hearing from renters.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, even in the last week, we're already starting to see, you know, we run a statewide hotline that's completely volunteer-run. Are run by volunteer counselors, and we get calls from, like, anyone. You know, it's free. It's not means tested. So we get calls from pretty much everyone across the state. We're obviously at pretty record or close to record levels of a backlog of calls that we're trying to work through. But, you know, we're already seeing attempts, you know, eviction threats being made that basically where landlords are saying to their tenants, as soon as I am allowed legally to evict you, I will file the eviction that day. I will initiate proceedings immediately. You know, we just heard something, you know, I don't want to violate, I have to be careful to maintain privacy, but we just heard of a large building in San Jose that's facing a ton of evictions in the building on September 1st. There was a tenant in Pasadena who actually spoke at a press conference with us and some legislators on around this bill who is talking about how, you know, she lives in a duplex. She lives in an in-law unit with her disabled roommate who is incredibly immunocompromised because of COVID and cannot go outside. And so, you know, she and her roommate have basically been making their rent payments, but, you know, have tried to kind of warn their landlord that they're experiencing a loss of income in advance. And the landlord immediately started harassing them, threatening them, already has a lawyer, basically saying, the moment I can kick you out, I will. Despite their sort of, they've been renters, they've never missed a rent payment for something like 6 or 10 years, I believe. So, I mean, we really are seeing, like, basically preparation for this September 1st date from landlords, right? And that's not to say every landlord is like this. Some landlords are trying to work with their tenants in good faith, right?
Right.
But what we are, the cases we're getting are quite dire and concerning.
I mean, 4 to 5 million people, this is a huge number. I mean, 300,000 in New Jersey is a huge number. But once you get into the millions, it's hard to even wrap your head around that.
Yeah, I mean, California has 18 million renters, so this would be one in every 3, 4. It's been a while since I've been in math class, but...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, 8 out of 18 million, that's quite a lot. That is going to be, like, hopefully it could be you, it could be someone you know, it could be someone in your community, it could be your friend, it could be your coworker, your parents, your kids. Like, it really is hugely impactful. I mean, that's well, at least one in every 8 people in the state, I think. So,
And this is obviously such a stressful situation. And then when you add COVID to it, it's even worse.
Yeah, it really is, and that's the thing. We've been saying this, like, eviction right now is a death sentence. Because, I mean, anyone who doesn't have a home or a roof over their head as this pandemic is spiking, but doesn't have anywhere to go, is at an enormous, like, risk of, it's a huge public health crisis in addition to being housing and eviction crisis, because they're going to be exposed to COVID. They're not going to have anywhere to shelter in place. And that could be, you know, the consequences of that, you know, could be not just the economic consequences of, you know, abandoning our working class like this, but, you know, the public health consequences of having a ton of people being evicted, like, or being homeless during the middle of the pandemic is not something that I want to see happen to think about, but yeah.
Right. And it's, I'm assuming that the last thing on people's minds, if they get evicted and then have to deal with COVID, is to change their address to vote. I mean, we don't have much time left.
No, no. I mean, particularly for vote by mail, because we're all voting by mail, those ballots are going to be sent out starting a month before election day. So we don't even have until election day, really. I think people have, I mean, about a month and a half or so to change their registration. So it is one of the, like, many horrifying angles of this story, that, you know, this is happening right before a pivotal election, and, like, renters are probably it's not going to be on their minds. They're going to be worried about being homeless or getting COVID. And, you know, not to change where their mail-in ballot goes.
Mm. Well, before we let you go, Shanti, we're going to take a quick caller. Let's go to Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say a few things here. First of all, we're a small landlord. We have a 4-unit and a 5-unit building. My family bought them over 40 years ago. They bought them with the intentions of having some type of a nest egg when they retired. Well, that's gone now. With rent control in San Francisco the way it is, the only rights we have as landlords is paying taxes, paying insurance, and keeping the maintenance up. Everything else is dictated by the government. So this idea that landlords are bad people and they think of their tenants as not people is not true. I just finished putting a new stove in my tenant's building and was happy to do so. But you have to understand, this was an investment people made to make a return. If the government wants, let them take the hundreds of billions of dollars they spend every year overseas, start building public housing and house people, or be honest about it, socialize public housing. Private property is being taken away from us as investors, and it's done in a very, very sly way here. They've done everything they can.
Steve, thank you for calling. And I just want to say for the record, Matt Shapiro said his problem is with the corporate landlords, the people who own the huge buildings. He was not criticizing small landlords at all. And he made that point. What is your response to Steve's comment, Shanti?
Yeah, you know, I think what's really important right now is to realize that, especially with small landlords, I agree with that characterization. Like, we want to protect small landlords, partly, you know, even as a tenant rights organization, the reason that we're pushing for mortgage forbearance in AB 1436 for small landlords, the reason that Ilhan Omar was pushing for the Rent and Mortgage Cancellation Act on the federal level, the reason that we've been saying, you know, to cancel rents and cancel mortgages and having all these demands is we think these demands are related. We saw what happened in 2008 when small property owners like Steve went under. What happened? The big corporate landlords, like, they were foreclosed upon, and the big corporate landlords like Wall Street came in and turned those rentals into very predatory and rentals with questionable practices like $1,000 overnight rent hikes and Black Widow spider infestations. That was Wall Street. That was not, you know, smaller landlords. So right. we've seen that coming from the beginning. And, you know, like, I've had been in some radio debates with landlords during this pandemic myself. But it's not, you know, I think we have to realize that not only are we in the same boat, but also it's that the tenant organizations are recognizing this. Legislators are recognizing this. That is why there is mortgage and rent relief together. And that is what we have always been able to campaign for and support together. Without getting into, you know, I think that's what's really important, you know, moving forward during this pandemic. And then as a small aside, just to clarify, whether or not you live in a city that has rent control laws or not, as a property owner, including places where those rent control laws exist, you are constitutionally guaranteed a right to return on your investment. Just wanted to make that quick clarification.
Well, thank you for that, Shanti. Thank you for joining us. We'd love to check in with you in the coming weeks to get an update on what is happening with this bill. Can you repeat the number so people can look it up and maybe call their legislator if they'd like to?
Yes. So it's Assembly Bill 1436-1436. It is currently in the Senate, which I know sounds confusing, but it actually has to go through the Senate first and then the Assembly. There are petitions available on our website, www.tenantstogether.org, that will just zap a letter to your state senator and assembly member, but we also really encourage direct calls from constituents. That's something we absolutely support. So it's 1436. It is mortgage forbearance and, you know, eviction protection for those who cannot pay for up to a year after the state of emergency ends.
All right. Well, Shanti, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Shanti Singh is communications coordinator with Tenants Together. According to the Aspen Institute, up to 5.4 million renters could be facing eviction. And thank you again for calling in, Steve. We've done a lot of shows. We're talking about relief for landlords. So again, the comment from Matt and others was not to slam landlords. They definitely slam the big landlords, but definitely not small landlord. So thanks for calling. Now I would like to welcome Valerie Hawthorne to the show. Valerie is Director of Government Relations at the North Texas Food Bank. And an article really caught our eye a couple of weeks ago about thousands of cars forming mile-long lines at the Dallas Food Bank. Hi, Valerie. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Valerie, once the $600 and extra unemployment benefits expired, what changes did you see in North Texas food banks?
Well, we saw it go back up. We do know that our economic security is tied, or our food securities are tied to economic security. So anytime you have a decrease in income of a household, you're going to see food security go down. So naturally, folks are worried about where they're going to get their next meal, where that food is going to be coming from, because they just don't have the extra income to support that. There's other things in a household that you've got to pay, just like you're talking, your previous caller was talking about, making those payments so that you don't get evicted. So food ends up being a compromise.
How are you all keeping up? Because our first guest, Sheila, was talking about her experience at her local food bank. She said the demand is so high in Denver that the food bank hasn't kept up.
At the beginning, I will say that it was a bit of a scramble. When it was March and April, it was looking pretty bleak. We were very concerned. We were competing with local grocery stores and national grocery stores to get food in our door. You know, they can pay much higher rates than we can, and then some items were just not available. You can only grow green beans one time a year, so when that canned supply is gone, it's gone until you have your next harvest. So we were very concerned, but we have had some relief. We have the generosity of our donors, which have been fantastic, that have allowed us to go and purchase and buy a lot of the food, as well as the government's response through their emergency food programs have really helped restock those shelves at our food bank.
I mean, the numbers are really astonishing. According to the latest census data, 29 million adults say their household did not have enough to eat in the last week. Sheila, our recent guest, said she only eats one time a day to ensure that her son has enough to eat. Are you hearing similar stories?
Yes, those are common stories. Most of the time that we do find that parents will always feed their children first. They'll take smaller portions. They will skip. They'll do whatever they need to do to ensure that their kids have food. The other conundrum that's been in this giant disaster that we're currently in, and essentially a crisis, is that school hasn't been in session, especially during the summer months. And we know that summer is one of the hungriest times of the year for most kids. They're not getting those meals at school, and they're not getting those after-school meals either. So parents have to find a way to pay for those, typically. And then you add a crisis on top of that, and it's just been really, really difficult for parents.
I mean, what was your response when, I'm not sure what food bank you work at in North Texas, but when that article came out about the mile-long line at the Dallas Food Bank, I mean, we're seeing this all across the country.
Well, I want to make a point of clarification there, that there is no Dallas Food Bank. It is called the North Texas Food Bank, and that's where I work.
Okay. Okay.
And it's the North Texas Food Bank, and we serve 13 counties. And that distribution, I got to spearhead that one. That was my role. So I was in charge of that. And, you know, you see the lines and you know they're there only because people are telling you, because you're on the ground in a parking lot and you have no idea how long that line actually goes. it's looking at the drone footage and the news coverage that you're able to see just how far it truly stretches.
Wow. What has changed about the people who are coming to the food bank? And we're almost out of time.
Oh, sure. Well, it's a different set of folks. It's a lot of folks that have never had to ask for help before. You see, when you walk, you know, it's not what you would typically think. There's a lot of criticism of, look at those nice cars in that parking lot. Just because you have a nice car in this moment doesn't mean you're not in an emergency food crisis. Most car payments, you know, you have to make them if you're going to repossess it, or there's a huge penalty for turning in a lease. And a lot of folks are upside down in their cars. So I will say it's a different set of folks that we're typically seeing in these long lines.
What changes would you like to see, Valerie, in the bill that the House passed more than 2 months ago? They would increase SNAP benefits. We have about a minute left. What changes would you like to see from the government?
Well, the changes would be I'd like to get it passed. So getting the president's signature on a bill would be fantastic. We know that the Senate and the House are miles apart from their next stimulus bill. So really pushing that 15% increase in SNAP, it's going to get people out of parking lots and back into grocery stores. The food bank network is not supposed to be the sole source of food for families. It's supposed to be an emergency allotment in times of crisis. And we're finding that food banks all over the nation are having to serve as that first line of food for so many people because folks aren't able to access SNAP benefits enough to benefit their family.
Well, Valerie, thank you for your work.
Sure.
Thank you for joining us, and we'd love to check in with you in the coming weeks and months.
Okay, well, we will be here, and we are always happy to help.
Thank you. Valerie Hawthorne is Director of Government Relations at the North Texas Food Bank, and you can read about their work at yourcallradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, we will get an update on COVID as the U.S. death toll passed 170,000 this week. 6 months in, and we still do not have a national plan. So where does that leave us? We'll get the latest on the death toll, what we know about the struggle to recover, positive cases among young people, and more. What questions do you have about the COVID crisis? I hope you can join us tomorrow. Thanks to Damian Miner for keeping our studio running, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.